Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming right up will be Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And stay tuned at 10:15. We hear from the organizers of 2014 Resistance Ecology Conference at Portland State University. Then at 11, Disability Awareness is off today. Instead, we'll hear an excerpt from Peace Talks Radio with a look at how people with disabilities learn to manage their feelings about having a disability. The program also looks at how those with disabilities handle conflict they may encounter interacting with others in society. And at 11:30, host Sarika Mehta interviews writer Jean Kwok about her latest work, Mambo in China. And now, do stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, June 23rd, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We are going to try to reach Janet Fallon. People who have listened to Air Cascadia from the very get-go and before we were Air Cascadia will know the name Janet Fallon. It should ring a bell. She's the daughter of an acclaimed journalist. Her father was a great journalist and much revered and beloved in the community. Janet herself is an extraordinary investigative journalist and going through a rough spot out of work in the year 2000, she was approached by a man who was not who he appeared to be. She was lured into an affair with him. His name, of course, being Smith, right? Her book, Exile, is a true story, so true you couldn't possibly make it up. Janet's life at the time was endangered at a number of points in her story. Direct threats were made. She was taken out when she went to report that someone had been trying to kill her, burn her house down, cause car accidents. She went to the police, and the police took her out and drove her out in the desert and said, "How do you want to die?" Janet Fallon no longer lives in the United States. It's no longer safe for her to be here. On the other hand, it's no longer safe for Janet Fallon to be anywhere. We're going to try to reach her today. We're going to be talking at length at a later date with Janet about her her path and why she's in exile at the present time. First, however, we've got some headlines. Redwood Forest Defense, a grassroots community organization, is fighting to change the Green Diamond Timber Company's short-sighted, unsustainable management practices. It's part of a Seattle-based Green Diamond Resource Company's larger plans to clear-cut the vast majority of their over 400,000 acres of California forest. It's a 45-year, and the word used is liquidation plan. The health of the forest are vital to sustaining as the longevity of both the economy and the biosphere in Northern California. The effort going into this right now is considerable. Again, it's something that we stand in solidarity with. Up in British Columbia, Unist.N territory on June 15th, that was a date set for an anticipated raid. This is a tip from This is the Native Indigenous Peoples First Nations effort in Canada to stop oil trains from coming through. There's actions all over the place, and we have word also that an action took place here in the Pacific Northwest. Many people know about it. It was on June 14th, dedicated to Marie Mason and Eric McDavid. But up in British Columbia, just to continue with this particular headline, there was a tip from the BC Civil Liberties Association that informed UNIST and that there's a rumor going around Victoria that the government, rather than file an injunction against the camp, filed a charge for trespassing using the Crown Lands Act. This particular nation, this particular tribe, never did cede any territory. So what the government of British Columbia is doing in invoking the Crown Lands Act is in fact illegal. Amid threats of a raid and impending pipeline approvals, Onist Otten clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation are prepared to continue to defend their territories against the incursion of government and industry. A soft blockade went up back in 2009, which remains there in place today to ensure the pipeline projects which violate the Wet'suwet'en law would not trespass onto their territory. And indeed, any incursion onto the Wet'suwet'en territories is in fact illegal under Canadian law, and the law again, which is being used once now to run pipelines through these territories. And First Nations in Canada aren't having it; they are standing up to the Crown government. And last month, Vermont passed the first ever law requiring labeling of genetically engineered foods in the United States. Remember that? We cheered. We celebrated that on the air. Well, Monsanto has just announced that they're suing the state of Vermont to stop the law from going into effect. Here's where, as I say, the rubber meets the road. This is where we find out whether or not the corporate power trumps the power of people in states to determine their own future, the conditions of life for them. It has become more and more, after Citizens United and in the current milieu, is more and more apparent. Catherine Austin Fitz has been saying this for years, that corporate interests now are dictating government policy. It's more and more evident wherever we turn. The outcome of this case, again, will be another deciding factor in how far we are willing to allow corporate interests to go in determining how we live our lives. As we see in so many other cases, in the Redwood Forest defense's fight against Green Diamond, more and more often, and as we see down and right here in Cascadia and Coos Bay, at Jordan Cove, corporate interests are determining what the law actually is going to be. Plans are made in corporate offices which disregard entirely what the actual law is, because it is presumed that those laws will either disappear or change in order to allow the corporate interests to proceed. Look around the country, wherever you look, wherever you go, whoever is listening out there, whether you're hearing it on the radio right now or listen online later on, whoever you are, wherever you are, you will see in your community the handprint of corporations on pretty much all of your laws that have been enacted in order to regulate corporate incursions into the environment and into social situations. Last month, when Vermont passed that law, again, much cheering went up. But again, we'll see what happens when Monsanto and Vermont go to the map. And the United States military sees itself as engaged in a total war against the entirety of planet Earth. All of its people and its social movements and dynamics right now are considered enemy territory. You don't believe me? It's true. We, in fact, are in the crosshairs too, the people of the United States. When American rulers say they are defending U.S. national security interests against all potential enemies, what they really mean is that they are defending the prevailing capitalist order against any social movement that might oppose it. And do we mean here just at home? No, we mean anywhere on Earth. They want to put the whole planet on lockdown and have enlisted U.S. universities. Yeah, that's right. Our institutions of higher learning are part of the project. There was a piece on this very topic that was reprinted by Truth Out, and it's there for the world to see, detailing exactly how this works. It is in fact true. If you think about it, pretty much anything that one might be doing, which in and of itself is innocuous and innocent, it takes merely the flick of a wrist to change laws. Corporations change laws whenever they like to make it easier for them to do business. It is equally simple matter to change laws or create laws or dismantle laws in order to dismantle social movements, to dismantle people's lives. We see it in ACES when it comes to talking about Janet Fallon and her story, which is extraordinary. And we see it, as we've suggested earlier in this program, we see it all around us everywhere. Now, as Democrats bear steadily rightward, their so-called progressive camp followers do likewise. In New York, get this, the Working Families Party endorses a businessman's champion, Andrew Cuomo, and in Chicago, an SEIU local donates $25,000 of members' money, to a corporate mayor, Rahm Emanuel. From compromise to collapse, the left liberals and union careerists are on the road to oblivion. Supposedly, progressive politics in New York offer a cautionary tale for leftists across the country. In New York, the Democrat in name only governor, Andrew Cuomo, and the new mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, who have been given a great deal more credit for being progressive than they might deserve. Again, look closely, read between the lines. It's not the stories that you see on blogs and on aggregator sites. It's not the stories that you see as headlines in the New York Times. It's not the headlines in Truth Out or Truth Digger, any of these things that are of any great significance in the long run historically. But you tell you what, it's the connections between these individual items, these individual beads in the chain that are important. It's always the connections. Talk to someone like Janet Fallon, who has paid not the highest price that journalists pay, though journalists that we see now in Egypt, as Sisi takes power, and our marvelous Secretary of State John Kerry shakes his hand and places the imprimatur of American power, restoring billions of dollars in military aid to that nation, to Egypt. At the same time, journalists are imprisoned in that country. Being a journalist has become one of the most dangerous jobs on the planet. This has been the case for decades now. But the speed at which the danger level has risen has amped up, in the last 10 years, starting perhaps with Janet Fallon, who is now finding she has no safe place, no place to run, no place to hide on the planet, because they can find you anywhere, and if they want to, they will. A number of our guests on this show who have been spurned by likes of democracy, by other programs, but have been able to find a place for their voices on this show, have found themselves in these situations where telling the truth could cost them their lives. So, that said, a little note first on the reaction that took place on the night of June 14th, dedicated to Marie Mason and Eric McDavid, at a fuel system of a mobile slaughter unit was sabotaged. This was at something called the Meeting Place in Hillsborough. A corrosive chemical was introduced to both of its diesel tanks, causing thousands of dollars in damage and rendering inoperable. Although the act not only served as a temporary reprieve for the animals that were slated to be killed by the machine, it could at least ensure a few slaughter-free days. The company uses the language of sustainability and humane treatment. There are two sides to every story. This is just one side of that particular story. We'll be hearing from Janet Fallon later on in the week, and perhaps at greater length. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, June 23rd, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland premiere of the documentary The Bird Who Flew Alone, The Triumphs and Tragedy of Gene Clark, Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This documentary explores the life and work of Gene Clark, singer-songwriter with the